biggest challenge, and the only chance the church that will survive, that will be biblical, it's to start with the children.
Yes.
We have to start from there. Let's see, start giving them a biblical worldview.
Yes.
How to understand things. How should they see things? They have to see it through that biblical worldview.
Yes.
With the hope that, okay, by the time they are ready to make profession of faith, they have already seen what the biblical worldview looks like.
Yeah.
And that's how they are going to live, even after salvation, even after marriage and other things. So. Yeah. Yeah, so the issue is the worldview.
Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacy Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life.
And this is the Gospel Life podcast, where we talk about Malawi, missions, and more. Welcome back to the Gospel Life podcast. It's been a while since we've been able to produce a podcast, but I really want you guys to hear about some of the programs that we've had going on this year at Gospel Life. And one that we're talking about today will be quite unique to all of our listeners around the world. It will be very different from the types of church ministries that you're used to, similar in some ways because humans are always the same, but unique from this cultural standpoint here in Malawi. And I have with me a special guest today, Dean of Shepherd's Academy and Pastor of Evangelism and Discipleship at Gospel Life Baptist Church, Isaac Zimbili. Isaac, say hi to everybody out there in podcast land.
It's good to be here, Josh, and greetings to all of you who are listening to us.
Yes. So Isaac is, like I said, the Dean of Shepherd's Academy. He runs Shepherd's Academy now as I'm focusing on the college program. And also, we are both pastors at Gospel Life Baptist Church, along with our third pastor, Wilkes Watch. And Isaac's particular responsibilities are evangelism and discipleship. And so that's why what we're going to talk about today is something that he came up with that he wanted to do. And it has to do with young people in our church and in our community. So I think the best place to start, Isaac, is by explaining to our listeners the traditional coming of age ceremonies that we have in our tribes in Malawi.
Yes. It has been something which has been practiced for a long time, and as Malawians, we do still practice such traditions. So when a young man reaches at a certain stage, that he has to kind of graduate to an adulthood stage, and there are these initiation ceremonies that the community organize. So it's actually the community that organize those initiation ceremonies, and they have specific men or women who go in the village searching for these young men and get them and take them to these camps, where they'll be told what it means to be a man, be a woman.
Let's stop there for a second. So these people in the community are part of the tribal leadership,
yes.
The chief's leadership,
yes.
In the community.
Yes.
They set up a camp like out in the bush,
yes.
Made out of grass and,
yes.
Bamboo,
yes.
Or,
yes.
Trees, you know, a place that these young people. One for the girls, one for the boys,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And this is where the young people are going to live for about a month.
A month, yes,
yeah.
A month.
So then when it's time to start, nobody knows when it's going to start.
No.
Except for
really.
These people.
Yes, so they are the ones who organize. Now, because of the schools, that's what kind of gave a change to the timing of when are they going to say. But
yeah.
In the past, before the schools, everything, they were just choosing whatever
yeah.
time they feel.
But now it's in the main school break,
yes,
between,
yes,
the school years,
yes,
which is,
yes.
Here is like mid-July to September.
To September.
Yeah. So during that window, initiation is going to happen. And then what happens, right, is these people, will dress up in the traditional dancing outfits.
Absolutely.
Which face painting, yeah. Crazy headdresses, crazy, rags, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of something for dancing, whatever. Yeah. It's, and also, it also depends with where you are.
Yeah.
Since you have different tribes,
yeah.
So the dressing will be also a little bit different.
Yeah.
But
the idea is these guys, when they put on these outfits, mm-hmm. right, which it kind of are supposed to look kind of similar to some animals and
yes,
different things.
Yes, yes.
The idea is like they become the embodiment of certain spirits,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a lot of witchcraft with that kind of dressing. Nobody just goes and dresses those things.
Yeah.
You have to have all kinds of rituals for
yeah.
you to be able
to. So I have to, a story to tell you. I don't know if you knew this happened, but so Jude, our son with autism, who's 14 now? Jude's 14. Had to think for a second. He was out on a walk with his teacher one afternoon, mm-hmm. and these guys were coming through the neighborhood somewhere near your house.
Wow.
And they came up to Jude and just scared him.
Wow.
And Jude just ran and was crying, and his teacher was chasing after him. And she actually called me. I had to go drive out and pick him up in the truck because he was so upset by
wow.
it. Yeah. So it's, I tell that because it's quite
very
alarming.
Yes, it's very scary.
Yeah.
And actually, in the past, they used to frighten people with pangas. What?
Yeah.
Like,
a machete. A
yes.
panga is like a machete.
Yeah. Yeah. A machete. Yes. Yeah. So. Yep. So those are the people who kind of go in the community. Yeah. They're getting people, gathering the.
So they
the
kind
kids.
Of kidnap these children.
Yes.
That are around 12, 13, 14
yes.
years
yes.
old.
Yes.
Take them out to the camp, and then what happens?
Yeah. So when they're at the camp there, that's where they start learning things which they are supposed to be taught. Mainly, it has to do with the sexuality. How should they view a woman if it is the boys? How to view a man if it is the girls?
Yeah.
But with the boys, one of the other thing which they do is to circumcise them.
Yeah.
So at the very first week, they have to circumcise them so that by the end of the month, if they're there for a month, at least their wounds are healing.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things which they are doing.
Which they're doing not as doctors.
No,
they're doing out there with some blunt knife.
Yes, yes.
And they're actually children that bleed to death or get infections.
It's very, very dangerous. It's very, I don't know the word. They're just chopping, if you
yeah.
were to use that word.
It's very unsanitary,
yes,
very
yes.
unhealthy. And then they're teaching them basically sex education.
Yes, yes. That's what they are teaching them. And I believe that one of the reason men in Malawi, you do not have a lot of them who are very faithful to their husbands, to their wives.
Yeah.
It's because of these kinds of ceremonies.
Yeah.
Like what they are taught at those initiation ceremonies is actually when they are out of their camps, when their wounds have healed, they are encouraged to go and sleep with a girl as a proof that now they are a man.
Yeah.
So at that very young stage, these boys are taught to sleep with women, and their entire teenagerhood to young adulthood, they will be just sleeping with women.
Yeah. And there's also a demonic aspect to that because of the spiritual things that are taught and participated in the initiations. Like I was reading about the Yao tribe in particular, and I think it's probably true in other tribes, the girls are taught that if they don't go and find one of these boys and let them have sex with them, then their womb is going to dry up. Yeah. They're going to become barren the rest of their life.
That's true.
And boys are told something similar, and it's all involved with the demonic powers that the African traditional religion is appeasing and empowered through.
I think basically everything which we see being practiced in the tradition aspect, it is always connected to witchcraft and the spirits who are hovering around, and we are trying to appease them. And it actually starts at the time when somebody's conceived. They are born, they are a teenager, they die. We are all still thinking of those spirits. So it's like this world of the dead is always connected close to us in every aspect of life.
In the sub-Saharan African worldview, what's sometimes called the Bantu worldview, these are ancestral spirits. You know, it could be your grandmother or whatever, but also like chiefs and things, great mighty warriors from the far, far past. So that, you know, like when you watch Black Panther and he goes through this ceremony and then he eats that flower or whatever, and he's suddenly in the world of the ancestors, right? And all the kings of the past are there to kind of invest him with the spiritual power to be the king of Wakanda. Like, yes, that's a comic book. That's Marvel, but like that's based off of real African worldview. That we are living in the world of the ancestors, and we are kind of taking on the mantle of the ancestors, and they're actually kind of living through us in a way, right?
That's very true. I heard of, I've forgotten her name, but she's from South Africa. She was giving a review of the movie Black Panther. And actually her complaint was that it kind of didn't show the true legitimate spiritual world that we Africans truly believe. It simplified it, in other words. In other words, she was claiming that actually there is a true and real world of the spirits, and that movie is just depicting little aspect of that, but we do have real that.
Which, you know, fits with the Christian worldview, right? So the Christian worldview is that there is a spiritual world. There are spirits around us influencing everything that's happening in the world of the living. The difference is that we don't believe it's our dead ancestors. We believe it's fallen angels that are doing it, demons. But, you know, even the Apostle Paul says when they worship idols, they're worshiping demons, right? So when they go into the temple in Corinth and they're in the temple of Apollo, they're not worshiping Apollo. It's a demon who is empowering that false religion and is kind of taking on the identity of Apollo deceiving people. And so the same thing is happening here. It's not that mighty chief from the past. It's a demon who is using that as kind of a masquerade to deceive people, but is actually empowering in demonic ways this false religion to deceive people and blind people to the truth.
That's very true. Very much true.
But we have Christians, right, in Malawi and other places that would say, but this is just something traditional, right? There's no harm in it. Like, we can send our kids to it, right?
Yes.
So explain that to people. How can people believe that?
This has been a part of our entire life. And the fact that people don't understand what's behind all of this tradition, and it kind of it looks so innocent from outside, that, oh, what's wrong with just taking my kid somewhere there, and they will help them, they teach them some good morals, and that's okay. Yeah. But I think it's still dangerous, because the issue is not just that they're just teaching, but those people who are teaching, they believe in these spirits.
Yeah.
So whatever they are teaching, to them, they are doing that by favors of these spirits.
Yeah.
So in one way or another, those kids will still be affected.
Yes.
And so, and I feel also that as a churches haven't really been on forefront in trying to help people to understand what's behind all of these traditions. And that's why an average Christian will not see any problem to participate in some of these things.
Yeah.
That's why as a church, Gospel Life, we kind of thought about it and say, okay, why can't we help our kids? We train them, we help them, let them understand what it means to be a man, but from a Christian point of view, and using Christian values, and help them see how should they understand a female, for example, from a Bible point of view. I think the church needs to come in that way.
So I think, you know, to paint a picture of the churches in Malawi, maybe we could say we have two main categories. There could be more, but two main categories when we're talking about this subject. We have the Pentecostal prosperity gospel churches that are really not concerned about the gospel.
No, not really.
They're concerned about, if you have enough faith, then you're going to get healthy, you're going to get wealthy, you're going to get healed. And they're all about enriching the prophet or the apostle, the pastor, whatever you want to call him. But the gospel is completely missing.
Yes.
On the other hand, we have a lot of churches that were started with missionaries from America and Europe that were started with the flawed methods of what we call today easy believism, where these missionaries went out and they preached a genuine gospel, okay? But their methodology was, okay, now who wants to repeat a sinner's prayer? Or who wants to raise their hand and that they repent and believe the gospel? Okay, you're a Christian now. We have a church here now. You're going to heaven. Isn't that great? Here's a Bible.
Yeah.
And then you don't deal with the worldview issues that these people are coming from. And it creates in their minds that, okay, Jesus is good for getting me to heaven, but I still need these old ways to deal with my life on earth.
Yes.
So in both instances, Christianity, you know, the prosperity side and the easy believism side, which there's some overlap in, Christianity's about getting to, it's not adequately dealing with life on earth. It's not dealing with worldview. The prosperity guys are saying, yeah, Christianity helps you with life on earth because it's all about the physical things, not the spiritual worldview things. And the others are, no, it's really about going to heaven when you die. And so what we need to do is we need to truly make disciples, not just make converts.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're seeing young people, and we're seeing even in our church a pressure to be involved in this. And so there's a need, as you were saying, to develop an alternative. Because these young people need to know about marriage and about sexuality.
Yes.
But they need to know from the biblical point of view, not from the witchcraft point of view.
That's also true. Yes.
Yeah.
And as I think I've put it rightly, talking about the worldview, that's the biggest challenge. And the only chance the church that will survive, that will be biblical, it's to start with the children.
Yes.
We have to start from there. Let's see, start giving them a biblical worldview.
Yes.
How to understand things. How should they see things? They have to see it through that biblical worldview.
Yes.
With the hope that, okay, by the time they are ready to make profession of faith, they have already seen what the biblical worldview looks like.
Yeah.
And that's how they're going to live, even after salvation, even after marriage and other things. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the issue is the worldview.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts.
To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
So this year, since it was our first year, we only focused on the boys.
Yes.
So tell a little bit about the conference and the programming and kind of the things you guys talked about.
Yeah, so basically we, because it was something which was a little bit new, we limited it to just a week, and we were preaching every morning the gospel, and then in the between time to 12 o'clock, midday, we will teach things from the culture which contradict the Bible, things which people learn at the initiation ceremonies, and then we.
So you were directly
saying
this is what they're teaching there,
yes.
But this is what the Bible says.
Yes, yes. So
that you didn't want them to kind of miss the connection.
Yes, yes. So we wanted them to understand that we are doing this as a replacement of what's happening in the community.
Yeah.
And we want to show you why we need this rather than that.
Yeah.
So we teach them what do we learn there and what does the Bible say. Mm-hmm. And then after showing that, then that's when we'll open the scriptures and also teach them their responsibility as young men as they're growing from the Bible.
Yeah.
So basically that's what we were doing.
Yeah. So just so people get the size of the issue here, to kind of go back to what you said before, men are so sexually immoral, committing adultery and all these things. We can have a pastor's conference, and we've actually done this. We're at a pastor's conference of maybe 60, 70 pastors. We'll say, how many of you married your wife because you got her pregnant? And like 95%, not maybe 98% will raise their hand.
Yeah, yeah.
In our almost 4 years of having Gospel Life Baptist Church, your wedding has been the only wedding.
That was the first, the only one so far.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean.
And we have had a lot of young people since then from the church getting married. Because they just impregnated the girl.
Yes.
And which points down to the very same issue which we are discussing.
Yeah. And yet, if we looked at church attendance in Malawi, I forget the statistic, but it's very high. Very high, the number that are going to be in church any given weekend.
On Sunday, if you're walking, you could see almost everybody turning to church.
Yeah.
Going to church.
Yes. And, you know, by comparison, in the county that I pastored in last in the U.S., in Kentucky, the Bible Belt, only about 15% of the population was in church on Sunday morning.
Wow.
And yet, the sexual morality, even though it was completely falling apart, there was still some sort of remnant. Like, people knew what they were supposed to do, and you had, you know, most people are getting married without the woman being pregnant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they may have lived together, they may have done things, but there is a memory of what is right. And here we're starting off with nothing.
Yeah, it's very bad. It's really bad because I can't just even remember at a time where you have young men who are not sexually related to somebody.
Yeah.
Okay, I just don't remember. It's as if it has become the norms of the day.
Absolutely. That's
the same way I speak of, for example, corruption. That is a norm of the day.
Yeah.
You go somewhere, somebody's offering you to be corrupt.
Yeah.
As if it's how life is. That's
And, you know, when Stacey has taught on marriage and things in the women's Bible study, the women just kind of laugh and say, no Malawian man will ever be faithful to his wife.
Very true.
None. So, I mean, that's the place that we're at. And so I think that your program with the young men, the boys who are becoming men, is so important. And it's also going to be important to start with the girls, hopefully next year, because we got to start from the right place.
Yes.
And then, we can begin building. Of course, I think we can talk a little bit about ministries that we kind of have planned to help those who are already in a marriage. So like, for example, we want to have a marriage conference that ends with like a mass wedding.
Right.
Explain that to people, why that would be the case. People would never think of that in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very important for people, mainly who are married here in Malawi, to really understand what marriage is. Because when you have a bad foundation, that house will always collapse.
Yes.
And we have been seeing a lot of homes collapsing, like the marriage is ending. It goes back to the way it all started. So you meet this girl, then you sleep with her, you impregnated her. You were not thinking of even marrying her, but now since she's pregnant, you end up marrying her.
Yeah.
So,
which means usually in these cases, they just move in together.
But
it's not like cohabitation in the U.S. where you don't recognize yourself as husband or wife. You are recognized by the entire community as husband and wife. You recognize each other as husband and wife.
Yes.
But there's not... it's not even going to the chief and doing a traditional ceremony.
Yeah, there isn't anything that really binds you together.
Yeah, which means when you have a problem in the marriage, you just move out.
You move out. So that's why you have a lot of men having multiple women with a lot of children.
Yes.
They're not committed to one. Yes. And any time they can leave and they go. Which also contributed by the culture. The culture is the contributing factor to all of these issues. But if as a church we start helping those who are already married to understand that it is a marriage and they have a commitment to one another, and that marriage is binding before the Lord, and they have to recognize that even before everybody, that's very new. That's something good.
Yeah. So, you know, what we teach is that it doesn't matter how your marriage started. You just moved in together because she's pregnant, or you had a tribal marriage, or you had a church marriage, or you had went to do the government certificate marriage. It doesn't matter how it started. Because God designed marriage, you are committing yourself and will be judged based on God's design.
Yes.
Not on the chief's design, not on your design, not on the government's design, but marriage is God's invention, and he's going to judge you according to his standards and expectations.
Yes, that's true.
It's not like a church marriage is a higher type of marriage than any other marriage. It's all God's creation.
Yes.
But what we want people to do is have, maybe in the U.S. we would call it a rededication ceremony or rededication of vows. I forget what we call it. But the point is we are asking these people to recognize, acknowledge what is already true.
Yes.
They have already, by the very fact they moved in together and recognized one another as husband and wife, they have committed to being faithful to one another until death do they part. Mm. But they've never recognized or acknowledged that.
Yes, yes.
But God is going to hold them to that standard. And so we want to have an opportunity in our churches for people to say, yes, I recognize that I'm being held to God's standard, mm. and we are making that commitment before the church mm. that's the standard that we're committed to. Mm. And I think that's a teaching thing.
Yes.
Where people are physically going through something and learning what it is that they're already committed to, but making that commitment yeah. public yeah. In their lives. Yeah. So we're starting with kids, but we're recognizing that this is something that all throughout the life and the generations, people have to be committed to.
Yeah, that's true.
So now what is really shocking, I think, is that you also did circumcisions.
Yes.
So tell me why we had a youth conference where we were circumcising 13 and 14-year-old boys.
Okay, so in the expectations of the community, it is at that very same time, these kids, they want to be circumcised. Yeah. So if we are doing the very same thing which the community is doing, but from a different point of view,
yeah.
these kids are coming. Still, we want also to satisfy those expectations.
Yeah.
So we hired some doctors and tried to meet that void.
Yeah. We got a surgeon, yes. a qualified surgeon, with medication and that kind of thing to do the circumcisions. And I mean, it's similar to, like, we made sure to explain this has no spiritual benefit.
No.
We do
no.
believe in the book of Galatians.
Yes.
Circumcision is nothing. Uncircumcision is nothing. What matters is a new creation. Has no spiritual benefit. But, you know, like in the U.S., a lot of people do it for medical reasons. And a father would say, you know, I want my son circumcised yeah. because I'm circumcised.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with that community or medical point of view, as long as we understand it's not spiritually powerful
yeah.
or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we want to offer that as an alternative so that people kind of get what they need, but
yes.
in a healthy way
yes.
in the church without yes. having to send the kids to the initiation. I want to ask you, what was kind of the response, especially among the parents and stuff, to their kids being involved in the program?
Yeah, so I think first of all, since it was something new, the way they were not expecting that we can do something like that, so there was a little bit of hesitant, but later on they realized that I think this is a good thing.
Yeah,
and we just had a lot of kids like. Even the ones who just came, they were not even circumcised. We had almost 80 kids who came. That
yeah.
was a very shocking thing for a start to have that bigger number. So
yeah.
I could say that if we are going to do this program again next year, which we are planning to,
yeah.
We are going to be having a lot of kids coming,
yeah.
Which shows that... parents see that this is a good thing and,
yeah, yeah.
And they'll encourage their kids to come.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I hope that everybody listening will take this as an opportunity to pray for these young people, pray for Gospel Life Baptist Church, mm. So that we can really go against the culture
yeah,
here
yeah.
And really create a new culture
yeah.
In the churches that upholds the biblical sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's the same thing that we're hoping for our churches in the U.S., although the issues are different.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of fact that the world is always going to come up with a sexual culture that is contrary to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And and we have to give the expectation to our young people from the very beginning that they're going to run counter of their friends at school.
Mm.
There's a different standard for them as Christian young people, so that they have the the ability to resist the temptations they're going to face. Mm. So I really was excited about this. I think it was fantastic. Yep. And I can't wait to see how the Lord uses it in the next year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube at Gospel Life Go.